All right, good evening, folks. Has that seriously been live for 14 seconds? My screen was loading. Hopefully you weren't just looking at me staring at the screen blankly for 14 seconds. Anyway, hope you're all well. Welcome to Big Footy Tigercast for a Monday night. It would be interesting to know if it did load for all of you, if I was looking like a complete dope at the screen there. But it is what it is. Hope everyone's doing well. Welcome to all the YouTubers and the Facebookers. Hopefully those who are on Twitter are able to jump across to YouTube. Post the link on the tweet. A little bit annoying still that we haven't got a solution for that one yet. We're still working on it. Grok will be here any moment now, and CB will be here in about 10 minutes as well. So, you know, the rest of the crew will be here shortly. I'm just mindful that I don't want to get too far past 8:30 before we start, because I know the natives get restless. You like to keep us to account with time, and I like that. I like that. No 14 seconds straight. Okay, that's good. But hope everyone is doing well. Before we get stuck into it, can I just say that you've had a reasonably good weekend when your team lost and has won the wooden spoon, but you've still been able to troll three other teams successfully on Twitter and they're up in arms about it. Could not have had a better end of the weekend if I tried, I don't think. It was very, very, very interesting week of football. So I suppose that the main thing I want to point across to people is I'm sure all of you have been receiving various text messages from your mates with wooden spoons and stuff like that. Just taking your stride. It's a unique year. I know there's a little bit to play out. We might avoid it, but it's not looking likely. But take it in your stride, and it's actually not the worst outcome. It doesn't feel like a typical 18th spot. And I know, you know, there'll be a lot out there that say wooden spoon's a wooden spoon, and that's right as well. Yeah, just taking your stride, and it's not the burn they think it is. It definitely isn't. And that's it, Kano. And the wheelchair Tigers are premiers. They've won a few, haven't they? I'm pretty sure. If someone correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't they won quite a few flags? I'm not sure if it's in a row, but I think they've been pretty dominant for a period of time, the wheelchair team. So well done to them. How are you, Grok?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Sorry I'm late. Had some laptop issues. Wasn't registering my microphone.
Oh, okay. No, that's all good. We're just saying that, you know, people trying to throw shade at us for finishing last is actually not the burn they think it is, because there's a lot of circumstances around it, and I think it's a bit of a free hit to finish last, and I, for one, am pretty comfortable with it. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we know the cliff was going to come, and we know that there's going to be a lot of players that have question marks, and we've sort of answered a lot of questions this year on players such as Mansell, Ralph Smith. We know that they're up to standard now. So I think this year's been a bit of a blessing in disguise for Uze, because he's actually gotten a chance to have a look at all the players that he's had at his disposal and can formulate what he wants the list to look like going into 2025, his first first proper season.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. It's a full crack at it with, you know, and at the risk of us sounding like broken records, it's something we've kind of been trying to talk about the last month and a bit, because there's sometimes not a hell of a lot of other things to talk about within the games because of the way we're playing, but it is all true. I did see you start Jones Racing, the message that you sent through. Essentially, it's in relation to Carlton that if their scoring happens to dry up even remotely, they are at severe risk of plummeting out of the finals very quickly, which would, I think, would bring a lot of joy to the Richmond faithful, I think it's fair to say. You know, it gives us a few things to look forward to, as have a couple of other the wins and losses that have gone, you know, the way in recent weeks. But, yeah, we'll be riding that one pretty hard. This is always a mulligan. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Now, I did, or I'll ask you first, did you have any trade-related news before I go with what I've got?
Me?
Yeah, did you have any updates at all from the stuff you hear?
It's probably, and hear me out.
We've got to hear me out. Here we go. This will be good.
It's going to be pretty divisive, but I got mail that Uze has potentially organised a meeting with Clayton Oliver.
Really? I was really hoping you were going to say Rory Lobb then. But, yeah.
I mean, we already know my stance on that, but I've heard that Uze is considering having a chat with Clayton Oliver. Obviously, if Baker and Bolton go, that's a significant blow to our midfield. And obviously, no matter who we take at pick one, whether it be Smith or Smiley or O'Sullivan, they're midfielders that probably aren't going to make a massive difference next year. So we need someone to really cover that midfield role, especially if Prestia goes as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it'll eventually.
But there's a lot of oh no's in the chat.
And that's why I said hear me out. But, yeah, I mean, I doubt anything will come from it. But obviously Uzo will have some info on Oliver, given that he came from Essendon. So
from Melbourne, yeah. What's interesting is I suppose the overarching thing with Oliver is I think for a lot of us he probably doesn't pass the no dickhead policy that the club seemingly has. But what makes that just a little bit interesting is maybe, and this is maybe clutching at straws as a hypothetical, but maybe Oliver's relationship with Goodwin wasn't the same as his relationship with Uze. Maybe they did have a bit more of a better understanding and a better relationship and mutual respect than what he does with the other coaches. I'm not sure. I'm just throwing out speculation, throwing out some possible ideas as to why Uze would do it, because you would think that with the players leaving our club, he would know how imperative it is to have the right people around these young kids at our football club to lead them forward. Like, if we get that wrong, that we're cooked for many, many, many years to come.
Absolutely. That's really the only one that I know outside the obvious ones that I've mentioned previously. Mm.
And it also comes down to what it costs as well. Like, he wouldn't want to be giving up. I know he's take away his issues as a footballer. He's actually a reasonably good player and does find the ball and extracts it quite well. So they would be asking for quite a lot, I can imagine. So that would be interesting. Now, the info I got, and a lot of this probably isn't, it's not new, but it kind of validates a lot of what we've been saying for the last few weeks and months in some cases. So I got a message from someone that I have no reason to not trust. I don't know where I'm allowed to say where they got it. Well, I think it was from, this is from a list manager of a different club, but confirming they believe as well that Bolton does want to go home and isn't fussed if it's Frio or West Coast. So that seems to have happened in recent times. That's not something that's been on the cards for a while. So I know there's been a lot of talk about, but you know, didn't Bolton come out and say that he wanted to stay, and Ralph Carr said it as well. They did. And at the time that was probably correct and true. But I think this has been a more recent thing that's recent turn of events as to why he now wants to go home, which he has flagged with the club. And the Rioli one is, yeah, this list manager still also believes that Rioli does want to go to the Gold Coast. I think more specifically his partner, Ralph Carsley's manager, pardon me, whoever his manager was, I think they come out and said it. But apparently Rioli's partner is also keen to get to the Gold Coast as well. So like I said, both of them not groundbreaking news in terms of that we've already spoken about it before, but it's hearing it from different sources that have no link to us kind of validates a bit more what we've been all been hearing and what we've been saying, because we're all hearing it from different spots. And it's just the age old where there's smoke, there's fire, I think. So I'll probably be bracing to lose both of them this offseason, just based on what we keep hearing, even though, you know, obviously we don't want to lose them. It's not necessarily the club kicking them out either. It's more about what they want. And I think history shows that we aren't a club to stand in the way of players who want to leave for opportunity or whatever their reasons might be. We're usually pretty good at brokering deals on that front.
Yeah, I mean, the Bolton one's been brewing in the background for 4 months now. It's the situation with Bolton is that he wants to go back home to WA for family reasons, and that was the only way that the club were going to hold him to his contract was if it wasn't for family reasons. He wants to go back. Obviously, his partner's pregnant with their second child now. And he just feels like he'll be better off being surrounded by his family over there. So, I mean, the club's going to let him go, probably not with a blessing, but at least they understand the reasons why. on Dusty, I have heard, and I mentioned this to Michaels early last week, that Gold Coast have increased some of their off-field offers for him to try and entice him. And the situation with Dusty is that there is now interest in that regard. Now, I still personally believe that Dusty won't go, but it's now changed from he's definitely not going to, it could potentially happen. Watch that space.
I still don't think, welcome CB, by the way. Welcome, mate. You don't have to speak if you're eating. That's fine. Welcome. How are you, buddy? I shouldn't throw you under the bus like that. I'm still not fully sold on Dusty being a good fit for Gold Coast. They've got some seriously good young kids running around, and I just don't see how or why he would dislodge one of them. But anyway, each to their own.
I mean, it depends what they want him for. If you want him to come in and play, you know, 15 games and get you over that line to finals, probably not, because let's be real, what we've seen from Dusty this year, he's probably not going to make much difference to that side going forward. But if he can be the example on the training track, because apparently he's the best trainer at the club, and provide an example to, I think it's his Bailey Humphreys, Dim is already compared to Dusty. If he can go along and mentor Humphreys, sort of like what Ben Cousins did in the first couple of years for Dusty, and we know what happened with Cousins and some of the off-field stuff early on with Dusty, but Dusty credited Cousins with helping him become the player that he did. So if Dusty could be that sort of one-on-one mentor for a couple of the younger boys, I mean, yeah, that'd be
He could do that without playing, though.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be shocked even if he retired and still moved to Gold Coast and was helping out in some capacity. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, while we're talking all things Dusty, shall we just address the elephant in the room then with the topic around Dusty? Who here honestly thinks that he should go on next year and play at Richmond? Watching the way he's moving at the moment, I'm actually hoping that he's certainly not playing for us next year. He's actually becoming a liability in the forward line. We're actually slower with him in the team. And we've got to fit Morris Rioli Jr. back in there. We've got Steely Green showing some form, Seth Campbell. So, unfortunately, I think for what we need moving forward, I don't think Dustin Martin's, I can't believe I'm even saying that, but I don't think that's a unreasonable viewpoint with us to progress forward. Yeah. And that's just my personal opinion. And I respect anyone who disagrees, I respect that as well.
If we do want him to play, it needs to be as like a super sub role. Come in last quarter, everyone's tired, where his lack of pace isn't really going to be exposed as much as his early game. If he can come on in the last 35 minutes of a game, go into the midfield for a little bit, I think he'd be okay. But if we're going to pay him, what, $600,000, $700,000 to be a sub playing 30 minutes a game, what's that, 20, 22 games of football, 11 hours of football over the course of a year, not worth it.
I hope he retires. I just hope he retires a one club player. That's what I want. So who knows what he wants.
And I think it's obviously goes without saying this isn't a Dusty witch hunt and we want to flick him off and whatever, because we're obviously everybody's super proud and respectful and love what he's done for the club. But age catches up with every player, and it's just a matter of fact when it comes to footy. Footy life cycles eventually run their course. And I said tonight to when we were having dinner, that I just don't think he should be playing at all next year for his own body. Like, it's just not what it used to be for him. And you don't want someone like him to be battling through each week pain and having to try and, you know, get through this, that and the other just to be able to run around for, you know, a few quarters every couple of weeks. I think it's a chance to go out on a reasonably high note. It could it won't diminish his career by any stretch, but it could just drag on even longer for him personally if he plays somewhere else, if it's not with us.
Yeah. Yeah. And while we're at it, while we're talking all things Gold Coast, I didn't have time to write what I wanted to write down, but what I alluded to on Twitter. But can we talk about Damien Hardwick?
Yeah, go on. Yep.
Yeah, right. So just thoughts on this. I'm getting some, and I'm sure others are as well. I want to remember Damien Hardwick with fondness for everything he did for our club. The fact that, you know, he brought us 3 flags, he brought us so much joy.
Yeah.
Gave us a great ride.
Yeah.
Yep. It's getting weird now, the feelings towards him. And I think their open courting of Richmond players, the poaching of our behind-the-scenes staff, it's going to be, you don't want it awkward when we've got a 10-year reunion coming up in 4 years or whatever it is. And it's going to be that awkward moment in the room when he's in there, where not everybody's quite feeling it like they should, and the supporters aren't feeling it what they should. So his actions right now and what Gold Coast does. Now, keep in mind, it is up to Daniel to take the offer as well. And it's up to Richmond to release him. So there is that component. But the fact that Gold Coast is openly pursuing so many Richmond people is concerning. It's concerning that the AFL engineered this move of Damien Hardwick to the Gold Coast, and they did. Doesn't matter what they say. That was an engineered decision by the Gold Coast to get Damien Hardwick up there to get their golden child up and running, because it hasn't been firing for since inception. And now we've lost Brendan Gale to Tasmania as well. And I just hope, and Damien Hardwick sets the strategy, make no mistake. If he says he wants Daniel Rioli, then it's their club is obligated to try and get him, right? It just doesn't sit easy with me, and I'm starting to turn in my feelings towards Damien. So I hope he thinks about this stuff long-term and the long-term implications about how we will remember his legacy at Richmond.
Yep.
And I think that's a fair take. And I hope he, yeah. It's up to him.
I saw a comment adding that he also traded away the future for Taranto and Hopper. I don't necessarily think that's just on Dimmer. That's also on people like Blair Hartley who are recruiting from other clubs as well. And look at the situation. We were one dodgy ARC review away from going deep into finals in 2022, and that season was when we recruited Taranto and Hopper. It wasn't our fault that Jack dropped off a cliff as quickly as he did from 2022 to 2023, and it wasn't, you know, his fault that Lynch went down for 19 weeks of that season and everything that went wrong this year and last year. I mean, you can't really put it on Taranto and Hopper. We thought we were a chance, and based on 2022, we probably would have been had we not lost the key players when we did in 2023. So I don't think necessarily the Taranto and the Hopper deals were bad. I think maybe one of them, if we should have just gone for one rather than the two.
Taranto would have been good. Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, we were also calling out for a contested clearance midfielder to cover for Prestia because he was always injured. So we got one, and now people it's revisionist history. The situation we were in at 2022 dictated, you know, we probably do need a contested mid to help push us to that next level come finals time, because we got absolutely smashed. We get a couple in, and then all of a sudden the sky's falling because we traded away draft picks and we fell off a cliff a lot quicker than people expected. But yeah, I just don't think that the giving up the picks is as massive a deal as what people think, especially looking at our draft hand this year. It's only 2 years on from that deal.
And I'll say this too, back on Damien. We've got them in the final home and away round. We really don't want our supporter base booing Damien Hardwick, you know. You know, it'll just be a crazy scenario that in the space of a year and a half, he could be getting heckled and booed by our supporter base for his actions right now. And that's not cool either. But if he keeps going the way he's going, it's going to happen. So, yeah, round 23 or whatever the hell it is when we play Gold Coast. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. I suppose I think both of those sentiments can live side by side. You can still respect, love, and appreciate everything he did for us, but you can also be a bit dirty about some of the ongoings since leaving the club. I think both of those things don't have to cancel each other out. They can live side by side, I believe.
Those shiny new toys have run out of batteries.
Yeah, it's look, I would probably be more against... I wouldn't want to be booing Dimmer at this point in time. I just want to beat him. I'd want to be making sure that we can continue their streak of not winning away would be how I would best want to play that one. But yeah, it's interesting to see how it plays out. And as a few people point out as well, I suppose the other consideration is Richmond is all he's known in terms of the people there and the players and things like that. So it kind of makes sense that he's naturally drawn to them to try and get him across. But yeah, it's still not... If they all go, it won't be very pleasant. But anyway, it is what it is. All right, we'll get to the game we had on the weekend against the Kangaroos. Kangaroos won by 13 points, 14-6, 90 to 10-17, 77. 10-17, goddamn. Goals where Kaczynski kicked two, Baker two, Hugo Railsmith one, Mansell Green, Campbell Brown, and Bolton all with one each. Disposal-wise, Dion Prestia, 29, Taranto, 27, Jack Graham, 24, Jaden Short, 22, the leading disposal getters. And leading the tackles, Toby Nankervis, a nice welcomed return from the big Nanku. I thought had a very good ruck duel against Jerry, but all to no avail. Well, we obviously didn't get the 4 points, lads. But what did you all make? What did you both make of the game? And what did everyone in chat make of the game?
You go, Grock.
I mean, it's the that simple cliche: bad kicking is bad football. That summed up that whole game. Yeah. Whether it was our foot skills around the ground or in front of goal, we just couldn't hit a bloody target. There was at one point during the third quarter, I think we were going at 41% by foot, which for those, the AFL average is like 65%. So we were like 33%
well off
AFL average for foot skills, which is absolutely disgusting. There was, and it's no coincidence that we started to get a run on when we switched to a handball game off halfback. We were moving it a bit more by hand. So it's just a dirty game all round. I think North, and we picked it miles out. We've been saying offline for the best part of 5 months now that North would knock us off. So the result was probably to be expected, but knowing that we had a chance and actually stuffed it up hurts a little bit. But at the same time, a part of me thinks how much of it was just a show of intent and effort as opposed to trying to win. Obviously, we know what was at stake. Pick one. Probably, I mean, I don't want to raise that T word because I don't think we can call it tanking, but
you're not good enough. Just not good enough.
The skills are just shit. That's a simple thing. It's just shit. So I thought Cozzy continued to compete well, his marking and everything. Credit to Nank for his defensive efforts, but I thought watching the game he got absolutely rinsed by Cherry, especially in the second half. I think he couldn't do anything. In regards to that, I thought it was probably Graham's best game of the year. And obviously, Prestia did well, but there were just some basic skill errors with kicking. So it's the main thing. I thought, again, a lot of the younger boys stepped up. I thought Hugo bounced back from a pretty poor game he had last week. But yeah, it's just, again, the first 10 minutes. And it's that dominance we have where we're all over him, and in the third quarter where it was 74% forward possession for us and we just couldn't convert, it's a killer. I think obviously not having a forward coach at the moment with T gone, I think that's probably helped. Look at it, we had 27 shots. When was the last time we had 27 shots at goal with T? So I think maybe there's been a little bit more of a change in philosophy there with him going. But, yeah, I think it's just a dirty game all around.
So what was our potential score based on? What's that thing they do where they do your...
Yeah, the expected scores based on shots and where they were taken was 64 to 86 our way. It was like a 20-something point win.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. There we go.
Once again, our senior blokes are letting... There's some senior blokes out there that are letting us down, aren't they, with their skill errors. The blokes that should be executing the skill are the ones more often than not cocking it up. And I hate potting guys. I'm not a fan of it, but I'm going to have to pot him this week. In my outs, I've got Jaden Short. Give him a spell. Seriously. He is so far out of form. Horrendous. Horrendous. Somebody like, I don't know. But the kids are trying. And again, we lose Brown and Steely for the rest of the year now. They're out with ankle injuries or foot injuries. So
wait, Brown as well.
Yep. Yeah, he hurt himself in the first quarter. Himself.
Yeah.
Now he's out for the rest of the... Oh my god. Okay.
Yep. So we've got two returning in the reserves. Is it MRJ and no? Sorry, Jack Ross and someone else returning through the reserves this week. Which would be great. But again, two in, two out. We can't take a trick with the injuries. It just To the end, we are getting done by the injury gods.
And they both syndesmosis. That's even worse. Jesus.
Yeah. So there you go. Force of returns. Yeah, good call. So anyway, at this stage, just play the kids. And I agree. I saw an earlier thing from Jones Racing 82. I wouldn't even play Lynch for the rest of the year. Put him on ice. Just now's the time. Get the surgeries. Just get it all done. Get it all done so we start the first day of preseason in some type of shape.
See, that's an interesting one because I'm the opposite. We've seen with Gibkiss and Lynch over the last couple of years now of having that extended break and then coming in. I'd try and get at least a couple of games into Lynch, given that he's on the wrong side of 30 now. He's played, what, 8 games in
2 years.
2.5 years. Given the off-season breaks and everything, probably a good thing to get some actual games in. But again, people, Dylan agrees with me there. But at this point,
there's 7 months though until he'll play again. Like, what are we going to gain from it?
And that's
not going to get continuity. But
yeah,
it's a tricky one.
So Bell, I think Bell probably comes in this week for.
I hope so.
For Brown, unless Bolter goes back forward and then we bring Blight in.
Yeah. On the game itself, yeah, it was. I actually thought early days our pressure and hunting and effort was quite good. It was at a pretty, I thought, acceptable level. I know we weren't converting the chances when we were dominating as a separate topic, but I thought. Yeah, the young kids hunt and chasing was really, really good to see. But yeah, it was probably just those two notable turnovers. The Taranto kick across the top of the back 50 that got turned over and they scored was probably a bit of a game killer in some senses. And what annoys me, it's those turnovers that are under no pressure. Like it's not on the run, like it's a closed skill. So that's the annoying part for me. But yeah, they're experienced. They should be hitting those targets 9.9 times out of 10. But look, early on in the game, it was good to see some of the young kids taking risks. We were taking some more of those inside, 45-degree angle kicks to open the game up, which we look a hell of a lot better when doing, which was good. It all faded away in the second half. And someone had a really good point before that a lot of the big difference was as well that North had, a couple of genuine key forward targets to kick to actually help kick the score for them as well, or to at least make it competitive for them, for their smalls to do their thing too, which makes a big difference.
I think also Taranto's playing pretty crook at the moment too. He doesn't look fit.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know how many of them are doing that, because a few people have flagged the same thing with Short potentially being maybe he's carried something for quite a while, who knows, and they're just playing out of necessity more than anything else. But this is a good one from MNP. For those who remember the Banks kick where he kind of just He put it off the side of his boot to go, you know, go at right angles because he saw the free man at the top of the 50 at the last second. It was a very, very skillful kick. Whilst it didn't look sexy spinning off the boot, it was actually a very, very good bit of vision. And I think Banks had a really decent game, Grock. I really liked his run and flair and what he brought to the table.
Absolutely. He was one of the players that actually showed some pace and line breaking, which I'm pleased to see. Obviously, it's been something. Get the better here. But yeah, I'm glad to see Banks step up. I think he's copped a little bit for the role that he plays. But again, he's not an inside collector type. He's the outside running wingman distributor. And yeah, definitely, I think he had a decent game. So yeah, I'm happy for him.
Just want to say, for the record, I got so irritated with the beard, I shaved it off today, hence the mustache. I've shaved my head. If I try and put a hat or a beanie on, I'm telling you, it's going to slip straight up. There's nothing here to grip on anything. I can't put anything on my head right now. It is like Teflon smooth.
Just get some Grippo.
Yeah, I literally need to put some of that. Yeah, get that. What's that shit? Yeah, the Velcro stuff. I need to get some Velcro strips in there.
Looking at some of the other young kids, so Seth Campbell, what did he have? 15 disposals, which was pretty good. Steely Green, look, I know he only had 6 disposals, but I really thought his chasing and pressure early on was quite good. In some ways, I almost felt like he was setting the tone for us from a small forward pressure standpoint. Did anyone else kind of get that vibe from him early on?
I put on another move. You talk about, should we just put Seth Campbell on the ball for the rest of the year?
Why not?
Yep. I agree. I mean, he's hard at it. Like, he doesn't take a backward step for someone so small. Yeah, why not trial him in Baker's role? If Baker's gone, why not give him that role? Yeah, see what he can make of it.
I mean, the first 15 minutes was terrific. We just didn't put on the board, but unfortunately we're not good enough to go for long enough, and that's just our problem. Our skill level's deplorable from the blokes. It should be better. So pressure's one thing, but then it's what you do with the ball when you pressure it and you get that turnover. And we're literally two steps off Benny Hill music sometimes through the middle of the ground. You can see what we're trying to do. We're just not good enough to execute it. And I know everyone pots, you know, there's a bit of talk on Uze and his coaching, but if those senior guys could hit those targets and flick that little handball flick and get that going, we'd be looking like Mercedes-Benz out there. But unfortunately, we are looking like Datsun 260Cs, unfortunately, from 1976.
I mean, Uze's not responsible for players missing 20-meter kicks under no pressure.
No, he doesn't tell them or teach them to do that, to miss those kicks.
We're not tanking, but you should need to miss those targets. Like, absolutely not.
Dion, when you've got the ball, handball it into the guy who jumps up like that, just so I can turn it over the back of your head and they can move it forward, yeah.
And speaking of, can we talk about that contest on the wing? That effort he gave with the tackle?
Which one? It's been so long.
Yeah, there was one on the broadcast side wing where he went to tackle and it literally it was a half-hearted tackle. He got absolutely brushed off so easily. Yep. That effort there for a senior player was pathetic. He did not go hard enough on that tackle that he needed to.
Do we need to invest in and go back to getting some proper tackling coaches in? Because it seems like that's been clearly one of our weakest parts of our game.
Get LaFell to do it while he's injured.
Yeah, true. He could teach him some of his Melbourne Storm stuff.
Yeah, his tackling. Jesus.
It tackles to hurt. Interesting question from RFC Centre, and I think it makes a little bit of sense. Do we give Rioli a run on the ball? I think he'd try anything at this point, to be honest.
To be honest, I'm almost taking a Paul Roos stance on people that don't want to be here next year.
Yep.
Oh, you're not going to be here next
year. I wouldn't do it. I'd be just going, Seth Campbell, if you're going to be here next year, fine. You get a run on the ball. I'd start coaching for next year, and it might look a little weird with some of the guys going on the pill, but if Baker's not going to be there next year, just play him on a flank.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I posted similar on the board and in response to someone who said that they hope that we keep one of Baker or Rioli. And I responded, well, if either of them aren't 100% committed to what Uze's trying to build in the club, piss them off. Because Uze doesn't need to have the same situation again in 12 months' time where he needs to know, all right, who's staying or who's going. That needs to be his and the list manager's call. If you're not 100% committed to the club, the rebuild, putting in the work and see what I'm trying to build, you're gone.
Which coach was it recently? For some reason, I thought it's Uze that said this, but I may be completely wrong. I swear there was a coach that came out recently and sort of revisited publicly the, are we now mature enough? And when I say we, I mean the AFL community, mature enough to be able to get to that point like the NRL where if a player's leaving, it'll be flagged and out there as public information, yep, even while they're still at that club, knowing, yep, they're going next year. Was that Uze that said that? Or was it someone, yep, else?
Uze on AFL 360 saying that he wants players to be able to nominate mid-year which clubs they're going to so that clubs can have clarity and start getting into advanced negotiations and make things clearer from a game plan and list management point.
Like, it's a very interesting comment coming from him given our circumstances, isn't it? Like, you can clearly tell that's heavily pointed at three people.
And Kane Corns, Karen, came out and basically said that Uze was whinging because of Baker, Bolton and Rioli. It was a reactionary thing. But fair enough, if you're losing three of your best players in your first year as coach that you'd hope to build around when you first got to the club and made the presentation, because there's no doubt in my mind when Uze did his presentation, when he had the interview, Baker, Bolton and Rioli would have been three of the top five players that he wanted to sort of build around, Bolter being another one. Like, losing
they've all got existing contracts. You don't walk into that interview thinking you're going to lose all three of them after your first year.
And I don't know if you covered it off, Grok, but what I'd heard was there were some mixed messages in Teague leaving the club. There were some mixed messages from the coaching group to the players, which has caused a bit of dissension as well. So I think Teague going has cleared the air a little bit, which has made it a bit more focused for Uze to get his points across to the playing group. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I've heard, and again, this is all take it with a grain of salt, but I have heard from a couple of people now that Teague was a bit stubborn in the way that he approached this season under Uze, trying to stick to what he knew under Dimmer, as opposed to trying to adopt what Uze was trying to put into practice, saying Teague's, from what I heard, had the notion of if it's not broke, don't fix it. But it's been broken for the best part of 18 months now. Our scoring hasn't been great. It was a bit stubborn and everything. So I think with him going, it sort of freed up. I think Lambert's been elevated in. Lambert's come in and actually said, all right, this is how Uze wants us to play. Everything.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that as well. And when you start to hear that, it visually translates onto the field. It, like, you can see what's being said making sense. That if there's no connection in the coach's box, what chance do the players have of executing connection of any kind?
Yeah.
People say our scoring's broken. Our forward line's been our most heavily impacted area with injuries for the year too. So you've got to, there's a grain of salt in that too with LaFleur, with Lynch being out, Dusty being out for periods. We haven't had the forward line, Morris Riley Jr. We haven't had the pieces in the forward line that we have wanted to facilitate scoring as well. Would that be fair?
I think it's fair to say that if any other club had the same type of injuries we've had this year, they would be in the same spot we are. Like West Coast were 2 years ago. They got absolutely reams and were struggling to field waffle players, and they finished bottom. Like, there's only so much you can do.
The case in point is Collingwood, reigning premiers. They lost Majacek and a few others, and all of a sudden, the reigning premier was sitting 12th going into this last weekend.
And I think as well, it's not so much making excuses. It's more about how good the competition is, like how good other teams are. That the moment you're missing, 10, 15% of your playing group, it's easy for them to capitalize. They can see those, you know, those weaknesses in your armor, and they can exploit it. That's just how footy's evolved, and that's how good other teams are. So it's not so much an us issue as it is how good other teams are these days. It's just how it is.
I mean, going back to preseason, when we all had three questions that we raised about what 2024 was going to look like. The first one was, can we get a season out of Tom Lynch? Because if not, we're in trouble. Well, we're seeing it right now. He was the one player we could not afford to lose long term, and it's happened.
Well, we did. Now, NP, this is a good point. I believe you might be correct. So Tiggs, and courtesy of you speaking to him, CB, was still, as recent as a few days ago, still adamant that Baker is staying. And it obviously goes against everything else that media are thinking, that other people with contacts are thinking as well. So he has stood firm on this and is at complete odds with everybody else. The only thing I'll say, without giving away where he gets the information from, it's kind of hard to not believe that answer when you know where he gets it from. It's truly an intriguing situation, because even, you know, within our own, you know, Grok, CB and I, we're probably in the camp that we think Baker's gone as well. But so either three of us are wrong and one of us is right. But it's going to be truly interesting to see how this plays out. And maybe if Bolton does go, maybe that's a bit more reason to try and keep Baker, or make a bit more of a bigger offer to keep Baker. I don't know. But yeah, I think he's won out, but he's happy to stay in that position until otherwise.
He reckons we'll know in the next two or so weeks. He said, we will definitely know in the next two or so weeks. He reckons? To actually quote him, and if he was on the show, he would say this, so I'm actually not throwing him under the bus. He's of the other way, reckons that Baker will announce that Baker's re-signed in the next sort of two or so weeks. That was his words to me. That's how strong he is the other way.
Yeah, and that it's going to be fascinating. Like, yeah, if he announces he's staying, there's going to be a groundswell of apologies flooding his way. I think it's fascinating, because the writing's been on the wall for a while, really. But yeah, he's, and like I said, with where he hears this stuff from, the same place as Lynch and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, the person would know if the move was happening.
Yeah,
so it's. And nothing's come across their desk to say otherwise. But
well, he called Hopper, and he also, people forget, he called Hopper to Richmond, and he also called Kaczynski.
Toronto as well.
Kaczynski, he called.
Yeah, so it's gonna be fascinating. Anyway, we'll see where it goes. Our salary cap, JD, we should be swimming in coin at this rate. Undoubtedly, I think, is it fair to say, gents, that on the assumption that Bolton and Rioli go, that we're going to be probably paying some of their contract in some capacity. Would that make sense?
Depends where Bolton goes.
Okay, if so Bolton, you're just a case-by-case thing.
If Bolton goes to Freo, we'll definitely have to pay some of his contract. If he goes to West Coast, maybe not.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, interesting. All right, well, we've got a game coming up this week against St Kilda, who, yeah, I mean, they've pretty much bombed out this season as well. They're probably thinking they're going to be a top eight chance, and they have slid out pretty massively. But having said that, they're still probably flying a little bit better than we are currently. So in terms of our ins and outs, those obviously, who was it? It was Brown and Smith that are out?
Steely.
Which one?
Steely.
That's so shit. On the back of them starting to play well. Anyway, so those two are going to be out. Who else? Who's coming in? We reckon Bauer. I agree with you, Grok. I would like to see Bauer come in. Yeah. I think so that's long overdue.
Bauer or Blight, one of the two, depending on what we want to do with Bolter. If we keep Bolter down back, it's probably going to be Bauer. But if we want to move Bolter back forward, it'll be Blight.
Will Sonzi or what's his name? McAuliffe come in?
Possibly.
Sonzi come off a 30 possession game in the reserves before the bye.
He did it playing as a pure midfielder, wasn't he?
Yep.
Pickett? Is Pickett a chance? No, everyone's putting a line through Pickett.
He looked, mate, honestly, MRJ and Pickett, they're games back. Pickett's only played one quarter. So I'd be... I wouldn't be playing those guys, but maybe, and this is where you say, you know, you talk about changing the midfield mix. Maybe it's Baker that plays the half, you know, the half forward role, and Sonzi comes in and gets a crack on the pill. Or McAuliffe, put him in there.
Yeah.
I would like to see Blight get a game as well. But I don't know if I want that to be at the expense of Bolter being forward. But yeah, I'm still totally confused as to what, where I want Bolter to play his football. But I think Bauer has probably got the most fitness base and runs on the board in recent times to get a gig. Jane Dracing just said that McAuliffe is a test with his hip injury. So we'll have to keep an eye on that to see what happens there. But yeah, if someone like a Sonzi is coming in, I think it has to be in his position though, doesn't it? We can't keep rolling him through half forward because we're not really actually learning anything from that. I know you've got to try and have more strings to your bow as a player, but at least see what the kid can do in his natural habitat.
Yeah, Thompson Dow. Good call, Nick. I should have. So maybe Dow, Bauer and Sonzi come in.
Yeah. There's also the question of if MJ's fit, do we bring him in as sub to cover Steely?
Nah, I'm sick and tired of blokes breaking down, playing half fit, full games in the resis.
100%.
Yeah, Tom agrees on Sonzi. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, do we give ourselves any chance of winning this game against St Kilda? We just don't have the confidence. Like, I mean that with a lot of love and respect, but it's, I think in some instances, some of the players have mentally checked out the older guys.
Probably not Coulthard, Dylan. Rumours are that he's not being offered a contract for next year.
Well, there you go. Which is disappointing. I kind of liked what I saw. I would have liked to have seen more of him along the journey. But
like his 5-6 week patch that he had when he made his debut at the, you know, last year, I thought he looked really, really good. He got better each week and then got injured and then couldn't make his way back and then hasn't really had a chance. He's played, what, one or two games this year, which is kind of telling given that our small forwards have been picking up niggles week in, week out.
There's a few people here. James Racing and Andrew, you are both all over this. Membry will be kicking goals like he's peak Wayne Carey. There's nothing more certain than that. So that's going to be fun to watch. All right. Well, with that said, let's look. We obviously think we might struggle to get the job done, but let's get a tip, including margin for it. Grok, who's going to win and by how much? And is that, it's at Marvel, isn't it?
Yes.
It's at home.
Is it?
Is it? I thought it was our home game at Marvel.
I thought it's Marvel. Our two games were at Marvel.
Yeah, it is Marvel.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Because it was back to back Marvel games with North and us.
Super duper.
Yeah. I really think we'll struggle with St Kilda's pace. They're very much a run and gun side, and we're generally struggling with that. And especially at Marvel, which we know we don't generally play well at. I reckon Saints by 7 goals. I reckon it's going to be a handy win for them.
They have, for whatever reason, even prior to this year, they've always been a bit of a tricky side to beat for us, haven't they, CB?
At Marvel, they are.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm not sure we play them anywhere else, do we?
It's like North Melbourne. If we get them on the MCG, we normally beat them, but we never seem to get them. We never seem to get them at the MCG. If it had been the MCG, I would have actually been tempted to back us, to be honest with you. But if it's in the Bunnings shed, I think the Saints will get up. Even though I do think currently Melbourne Storm could possibly outscore St Kilda. It's just that we won't.
Yeah, I think the Saints, especially at Marvel under the roof, they do play that ground exceptionally well. And I think someone put a stat in there before that we have not won at Marvel since Dimmer came out publicly and slammed Marvel Stadium. So cheers to that, Dimmer. We are still, not doing that well.
Mr. Spokey Goat reckons they smashed us in 2017. I reckon I can recall Dusty bending one through at the end of the year from about 45 out with a check side and broke their hearts, mate, on the way to the finals run. So if you want to talk about round two, talk about round 20 and let me know what happened in that game.
I reckon we might get done by 6 or so goals, but again, you just want to see some fighting spirit. I just want to say, I know we said this last week, and I sound awful saying it again this week, but we just want to see the experienced guys fly the flag a bit. Like, give these youngsters a bit of a chop out and help their development by putting their best foot forward. I don't know. It's just, we just need a bit more from them. But anyway, we'll see how that pans out. Was there any other comments here that I had missed? Who's going to keep Higgins quiet? Oh, how's Peter going? Peter, EJ's going well, so he might be a sneaky chance for a return in a couple of weeks. Tiggs said he should be okay for next week. I still treat Tiggs case by case with how he's going with recovery, but hopefully we see him next week. And coming up in October, we do have Cameron Hicks coming on, who is a mad Richmond supporter, and he works in the draft area, like talent ID area for the AFL. So he's going to help us with the draft stuff. So for anyone who remembers our draft show last year, where we went through a mock draft and we flagged Kane McAuliffe as our first pick that we're going to take, that was the handiwork of Cameron Hicks, who sent us through his mock draft to read out. So he nailed that, given that pick was in the 40s, was a pretty, or 50s or 40s, whatever it was. It was a very good effort. So he's going to join us sometime in October to go through some power rankings, some top 25, some bolters, some sliders. And with our potential draft hand, he'll hopefully be able to give us a bit of insight into who we might be looking at taking, in this upcoming draft, which will be really, really good. So keep an eye out for that one later on in the year. Is he out on parole this week? No, we're not sure if he's hit parole this week, actually. We'll have to wait till he's got access to his one phone call again before we can get him back on, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he's still got his ears on, mate. That's all I want to see.
A few comments about that, about parole. Very good, very good. All right, well, thank you, Grok and CB, for joining me tonight. Much appreciated. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. Make sure you give us a like and a share, whatever platform you're on. We're almost at 900 subscribers on YouTube, so make sure you get around that. We're trying to track towards 1,000. It'd be massive to hit 900 and then 1,000 next year. But thank you for joining us tonight, guys. Much appreciated. And look, we know it's been a tough year, and I'm probably a little bit conscious that it feels like we're maybe repeating a lot of what we say some weeks, but it's when we're playing that bad, there's not a hell of a lot we can really talk about, bar reiterate some of the messages and information that we have. So we're doing the best we can. We appreciate everyone sticking around, and we will see you next Monday night. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Stick it up them Tigers.
Está